I'm back from vacation this week after last week's slightly pre-recorded episode. It was so weird recording last week's episode the day before the previous week's because the new MacBook Pros were out, but we couldn't talk about them yet based on like our schedule and planning it.
Yeah, it was a bit awkward, but I think it flowed. We had some pretty good stuff to talk about anyway.
Yeah, I was happy with it. So couple of things I want to mention from my experience of just going on my summer vacation. One thing is my carrier, I recently downgraded from like one of the new unlimited data plans to a tier data plan again, just because my phone bill is like outrageously expensive. And on like the first day of vacation, our family hit our data cap, and I had intentionally like turned off LTE access for all the apps that use the most data for me. But we collectively hit the data cap, and the new thing on the newer plans, they used to just charge you for every, it was like pretty standard in the US, the carriers would charge you, for every extra gigabyte that you used. And it'd be like $15 per gigabyte. It was very expensive, but you got to keep using your same speeds. Now they don't do that anymore. They just throttle your speed to like 128 kilobits per second, which is so unusable that when it happened, we were all away from Wi-Fi, and we're traveling, and we're like at a theme park, and I get the text message that says, you know, hit the cap, and your speeds are now 128K. And something like that, and then I go to upgrade it because like there's no way for 2 weeks that we're going to be able to live like that without LTE basically, and like they don't make any exception for their, this is AT&T, they don't make any exception as far as I can tell for their website to change your speed. Like I had to wait until I was back on Wi-Fi to access their website to change my plan to have, you know, my speed back. It was crazy, and it's made me think like, of all the ways that they like do like fast lanes and you know exceptions for different services and you know play around with speed, surely they would make their website where you give them more money to like basically restore your service work without exception.
Yeah, that should be like on the whitelist.
Yeah, but no, it wasn't in my experience. And I
think that's a kind of classic carrier logic.
Yeah, I thought like maybe the thing that I they want me to do is call them on the phone, but then that idea was just dreadful. Of like, hey, I need to give you more money, boost me up, you know, that kind of thing. And then I noticed that the only way to go reasonably was back to an unlimited data plan. So basically, my experiment to like save money failed. And there's two unlimited data plans that I saw from AT&T, and I chose the lower of the two because it was, you know, more cost effective, I guess. But I think what I'm missing out on is tethering, because on the way home, my kid was like, can I have Wi-Fi access on my iPad? And I was like, oh, we're back on unlimited data. Why not? And both me and my wife went to go turn on a hotspot, and it's like grayed out. And we just assumed it was part of the new plan, the more expensive plan, but not the most expensive plan. So just all around, I'm not happy with U.S. cell plans.
Yeah, I think we have it a bit better over here, but isn't it? I certainly wouldn't rank them as my favorite companies in the world. I have tethering on a very cheap plan. I only pay £8 a month, but my cap's like 4 gigs, so my usage of tethering has to be quite limited. Like, especially, it's all right if you're on like the iPad, because the iPad knows that you're kind of like, you know, on the go still. Yeah. Whereas if you're on your laptop, like it just accesses it for some Wi-Fi. Normally, like, it downloads full res images, you know, anything's every single app wants to update in the background constantly, and you just sap through any data plan like super fast.
Yeah, without installing any kind of like finicky third party utilities, the Mac is just like full blown. There's no concept. You know, even if I think you're using Hotspot like the smart way, where, you know, it knows it's your iCloud account on the hotspot device and it connects to it. So
that's what I do. And the apps just have no awareness of, you know, what the service that you're using is. Like on the iPhone, for instance, Tweetbot turns off streaming when you're on cellular and it streams on Wi-Fi. But on the Mac, it will stream on Wi-Fi endlessly, and it doesn't, if you start tethering, it won't know, and it will just keep on going. And you know, you don't have to stream your timeline for very long for all the images that come along on the media to sap in the background. Like, you're not even tabbed into it. You just have to be a lot more careful if you're tethering to the Mac on, you know, data caps.
Yeah. All right, let's get into some of the news this week. We've got a few big topics to talk about. The first thing is a little bit of catch up. So since we last talked about the new MacBook Pros coming out, I think we ended on the fact that the i9 processors were suspected to be overly aggressive in slowing down the processor under less than expected like heat loads. And since then, there's been a software fix in place. And I was away for this story, so it's kind of catch up for me. But what was it? The specific reason was a missing digital key. Is that right?
That is what they said.
Yeah, I just want to say that was my first guess too. Totally.
And the what it seems to have been is that the because the numbers didn't affect Apple's benchmarks or their testing couldn't recreate it. It seems they Apple's been cagey, but what seems to have happened is that the digital key was present on their internal builds and pre-production, but the final firmware that got shipped out on the customer devices didn't include it, which meant it caused problems. Because after this came out, they were very clear that all our advertised benchmarks are still the same, that we weren't affected, and it took them a few days to even work out what the discrepancy was, because like one of the big YouTuber that kind of like started this off, Dave Lee, he said that Apple, you know, directly contacted them and recreated a setup to try and diagnose what was going on, because they just couldn't get the same results on their first internal testing. So there was definitely some finicky thing where Apple's internal software was different to what was actually shipping on the products at a very subtle level, and that was causing, you know, these problems. And with the supplemental update in place, the laptops still throttle, but they're back to like a normal degree. And as we said before, you know, all recent MacBook Pros throttle after a while. They're just heat-constrained laptops, and they get there. But there's none of the dropping down to like 800 megahertz after like 30 seconds. Yeah. It generally seems to have smoothed out the curve, and you can maintain the higher frequencies on the i9 for a lot longer. Oh, and the update does apply to all models. It was just exacerbated on the i9 because of the extra heat usage. But the missing digital key was indeed missing on the entire of the new MacBook lineup. Yeah. It wasn't just the very, very high end one.
Yeah, this all like focus on the chip speed and then gigahertz and then going down to 800 megahertz. Put into perspective the really slow speed of my MacBook, 12-inch MacBook, 1.2 gigahertz clocked. I don't have room to throttle. It's all or nothing, you know, because 800 gigahertz is not that, or megahertz is not that far away from my promised top speed there with my Intel Core M chip M3. I didn't see the Twitter reaction. Were there any good jokes about missing digital key and butterfly keyboard?
There were a few. It was
okay.
It wasn't as good as what I was hoping for. I was really trying to get a good pithy one in there, but I couldn't get one that was like really on the nose.
Yeah, it's a really obvious joke, and I didn't want to make it when I got back because I realized that I was a week away. Surely everyone had made the same jokes, but I didn't try and catch up or anything. The other thing that we talked about was how iFixit had discovered the silicone layer under the keyboard to, you know, from Apple's like marketing talk, make it quieter, but then maybe hopefully try and keep dust out from getting stuck beneath the keys. And since we had that conversation on the podcast, there's been internal Apple memos to like repair staff that acknowledges that the membrane is indeed there to prevent dust from getting trapped and hopefully prevent this keyboard problem that's been, you know, worthy of a repair extension program.
Yeah, so Apple isn't saying anything publicly still, probably for legal reasons, but there does seem to be quite a lot of evidence now that this probably does address the problem for 99% of the cases. And we're a few weeks in already, and we haven't heard any crazy reports of people's keys getting broken on the new models. I'm still waiting out. It's going to happen eventually. It'll be a headline news for a day. 2018 MacBook Pro, keys broken. But
yeah.
I think we are out of the woods on that one.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I poked into an Apple store and did the thing where you try and type on the keyboard and everything. And, you know, I had no like major takeaways. I was just like, this is acceptable as the old keyboard styles were. So I don't know.
I need to get mine replaced. I need to get my 2016 MacBook Pro. The B key is still broken. Yeah. And I can't even type my password in reliably anymore. Like, my password includes the letter B, and obviously password fields are just secure text fields, so they just replace them with like the bullet points, so you can't actually see the characters. And I had to reset my password because I typed the wrong one in so many times, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't me typing it wrong. It was the fact that it kept putting extra B's in the password. So that was not fun. But equally, I am dreading the prospect of sending this off and having to find some replacement laptop for a week, 10 days. So I'm sticking with it, but it is getting rough.
Yeah, before I went on vacation, I did like a little bit of computer maintenance and tidiness so that I'd come back to my desk being, you know, nice and neat and my computer being totally clean. And I took the canned air to the MacBook keyboard and just to kind of get a fresh start. And I think actually, like, I did the thing they show where you do it at an angle and you do it in a motion. And I think all I did was just move all the dust to like the space bar, because I come back and like the space bar is stiff and it took some banging to get it to be normal again. I didn't bother trying to get it fixed while I was away, although that would have been the ideal time to not have my Mac for a week. But I just didn't end up traveling with my Mac at all. Just went iPhone only and the watch. But mine's still in need of the fix too.
Yeah, because in the past, my keys have been very temporarily broken, like this, you know, one day only, and then I bang it a bit and it goes back to normal. But this B key is stubborn and it is not nice.
Yeah. 9to5 Mac and Happy Hour are giving away a brand new 2018 Apple MacBook Pro, announced just a few weeks ago. At retail, this costs $1,800, so this is one of our biggest giveaways yet. And that's possible thanks to our sponsor, Hyper. Hyper is the company behind HyperDrive, the most crowdfunded USB-C hub for MacBook Pro ever, raising over $3.1 million on Kickstarter and Indiegogo. The company now has four versions of its HyperDrive for MacBooks and MacBook Pros. What makes HyperDrive different than any other hub on the market is power delivery pass-through charging through both its USB-C ports. Knockoffs only support power delivery through the Thunderbolt 3 USB-C port, forcing users to choose between using Thunderbolt 3 port or charging their MacBook. HyperDrive Duo, Pro, and Net models, on the other hand, allow users to use Thunderbolt 3 and charge their MacBook at the same time. Hyper has been around for many years, making tons of great accessories for Macs. Hyper was behind some of the first batteries and hubs for MacBooks, long before USB-C, so they stand out from knockoff vendors. Listeners can support Happy Hour and Hyper by shopping at hypershop.com and using coupon code 9to5MacBook at checkout to save 10%. Again, that's 9to5MacBook at checkout to save 10% site-wide at hypershop.com. And look for the giveaway form on 9to5Mac.com to enter the giveaway for the new MacBook Pro. All right, let's talk about the iPad for a bit. So last week there was later in the week, some pretty big iPad news in terms of rumors about what to expect. So we've expected for a while now, I think first by KGI Securities, Ming-Chi Kuo, now of TF Securities, that the iPad Pro will have Face ID, be, you know, much reduced bezel, no home button. And now Mac Odakara has new details about more of what to expect in terms of how the iPad gets there. So tell me what's new there.
Yeah, so Mac Odakara has some specific dimensions. The 10.5-inch model is slimmed down on height and thickness, but width is actually slightly like 4 millimeters bigger. And the 12.9-inch is slimmer on all three dimensions, which is reassuring because obviously we're expecting, you know, bezels to shrink, body to go down. And then Quo referred to the 10.5-inch iPad as the 11-inch iPad, So these dimensions certainly line up with that, where the 12.9 inch keeps the same screen and a smaller overall body, and the 10.5 inch, now 11 inch screen gets slightly bigger, and the body's still getting smaller, but not to the same degree as its big brother.
Mm-hmm.
The controversial thing here is that this report implies that these iPads will be dominant portrait mode devices, because it says that Face ID will not be supported in landscape. Mm. So you'd have to unlock in portrait. And then the other half of this is that the iPad Pro Smart Keyboard, it says, may be changed to vertical position specifications. And that seems to suggest that the keyboard would dock in portrait, kind of like the original iPad keyboard.
So the smart connector itself moves, and then the accessories would need to adjust for that relocation, right?
Yeah, so the what Makatsukara said is that the smart connector moves to the rear of the tablet closer to the Lightning port, and later on we actually saw a leak from OnLeaks of a CAD rendering which shows the new position of the connector, and it's like horizontally centered where the Lightning port is, but it's not on the edge, because the current smart connector is on the long edge, on the like the curved side. It's like on the flat back above where the Lightning connector is.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a lot of redesigning going on here. The question is whether it actually means that the iPad Pros are becoming, you know, portrait first.
Yeah, it's with a big screen. I mean, it's just hard to think about the big iPad as a portrait default. I mean, Apple already looks at it that way by some of the setup screens initially were only in portrait orientation, and the Apple logo in the back is obviously portrait orientation. But then, in like, I don't know. I mean, I would love to hear from people that use it mostly in portrait mode, but I feel like landscape is the default for the majority of people that use the really big iPad.
Yeah, when the iPad was first introduced, they kept, you know, repeating the line, it adapts to whatever way you hold it, because it could rotate on all four dimensions and blah, blah, blah. As the iPad got bigger, and especially since like iOS 9 with the split-screen multitasking stuff, the pros for me are, you know, landscape first by a mile.
Yeah, like you could, I mean, the original iPad keyboard dock was for portrait orientation, and it was like a wide keyboard, and then your narrow iPad sat within it on a 30-pin connector, and then was held up by plastic. That's the key difference for me now, is that like, even if you had a return to that form in some way, the fact that multitasking and split screen is so much better in landscape mode, because you're splitting a much wider canvas. You know, who cares about the vertical height? It's the width, you know, how much you can see that way, that makes it much better at multitasking. I mean, otherwise you got like really tall, really skinny columns, which is like, okay, I guess, and some, you know, like Twitter, I guess, but you know, I think the, like, any marketing material for multitasking, Apple always shows landscape for a reason.
Yeah, and to be honest, they show the iPad a lot in landscape nowadays.
Sure.
They even have the dock where you can put loads of icons in, and they just like you having the fingers and the gestures. Even it's easier to do the new gestures on the holding it in landscape, just because you've got a wider width to move your finger around versus, sure, yeah, it being more constrained in. And it was quite funny, when I was tweeting about this, someone replied to me, I didn't even know you could do multitasking in portrait, because it's just not done, right? Like the landscape fits so much better into how this stuff can be presented. Some people did come back and say, what if they did a new portrait mode where it's one above, one below, not split down the middle?
Sure, yeah.
They could do that, but and Android does that even on the phones. I haven't mocked it up or anything, but I just instinctively think that that's way, way worse than the landscape arrangement. Because I think it's because if you have the top of the toolbar of the bottom app, you're like slipping your finger into the top app, just because there's no like delineation on the, because what you want to do with the iPad is scroll, right? Like that's like a primary action of a multi-touch surface. You just, mm-hmm, scroll, and if you're splitting top and bottom, the amount of space you've got for those vertical movements is just constrained. Whereas, mm-hmm, if you go landscape, you just got more room to move around. Like, I don't think top and bottom multitasking would work. Here's how I would see this rumor. So it's supply chain sourced. I think there's very, very little chance that they know exactly how the Face ID chip works in this new product.
Sure.
It could be, it is probably in the same position. Like, physically, that's where the camera is, where it is now, you know, in the top middle. But I don't think there would be any obvious signs that would Mac attacker would be able to know that it doesn't work in landscape. Or even if it only works in landscape, or if it works landscape and portrait. Like, that doesn't seem like the kind of information they would be exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just put that one to one side. Then you've got the keyboard point. Just because the keyboard connector goes to that position, it doesn't preclude them from making a smart keyboard that works horizontally. It would just have to be radically different. Like, the current smart keyboard doesn't fit flush to the back at all.
Yeah.
So it would need a lot of reworking to have, like, a new keyboard which connects the back to the connector.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah.
But they could do it, right? And then sure. Maybe if they flip the axis of where it connects, maybe you get more leeway in the angle you can hold the iPad and where the keyboard goes.
If the smart keyboard was more like a smart case, which I think they've actually had a product called Smart Case, but it wasn't really smart. It was just a case. The thing that's smart about it was that it folded back and was a stand. They've had smart cover and smart case and smart keyboard. If they had a smart keyboard that was like a keyboard version of the original smart case, that was like the front and back thing, and that then you're right about that they could have the smart, you know, it could connect that way. It would just always be
because right now
that.
It's a keyboard cover because it only covers the screen.
Yeah,
but they could make, if it covered the back as well, you'd basically have like a full iPad case, and it would protect both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's out of the question that it is now. That I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that these are portrait products.
Yeah, and there's certainly a lot of ergonomics to be improved with the current smart keyboard, like how well you can use it in your lap. Not well at all. Like, it's not very stable. The you know, apply pressure to the middle, and the keyboard itself, like, bows down, and your space bar, like, goes active. I've not spent a lot of time with a smart keyboard, although I have one, just because compared to a laptop, the ergonomics just don't do it for me, you know? It's meant for us, like, to be used on a flat table, you know, and not your lap, and it's not very portable. Whereas a laptop is like, you know, any surface, it's rigid, it's upright, the screen can be adjusted. So there's a lot of ergonomics to be improved with the current smart keyboard, and maybe that could be part of it. Sure.
They could also have an alternative accessory like the original iPad dock if they wanted to, because if it's going to the back middle, It makes it more like you could have like a standing dock again that had a keyboard in the other direction if they wanted to. Like, I think moving the connector to the backside just gives them more flexibility in the kind of accessories you can do. And to date, there are very, 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 very few smart connector accessories available. So perhaps they've realized that if they move it here, it'll be more useful for different companies to actually, you know, expand on its potential.
Yeah, I was wondering in the reaction to this, like, if people are upset that maybe the current smart connector accessories wouldn't work. And with every smart keyboard, like, if the iPad changes the size, then you need a new keyboard, even though the connector would actually work and communicate with the iPad. Because the dimensions of the screen change, then you need a new, like, if you go from the 9.7-inch to the 10.5-inch, iPad, you need a new smart keyboard. I was wondering if people were upset that, like, the smart connector accessories wouldn't work today. But there just aren't very many. It's the Apple smart keyboard. Logitech has a few keyboards as well. And then Logitech has the base stand, which charges and, like, holds it upright. But that's it.
Yeah, I mean, Apple's going to need new keyboards anyway just because the bezels are getting thinner and those dimensions are changing.
And they've not been afraid to do that, like, every year when they need to.
Yeah. So the keyboards are a foregone conclusion. And then you've got, like, the Logi desk dock thing that nobody bought. And
I love mine. I love
that. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
There you go. So, yeah. Boo-hoo. Is that cool?
Yeah. Well, and, like, if they made another version of it, I use mine so often. Like, I never plug my iPad into Lightning to charge. I just put it on that little dock, which charges from Lightning in the back and then through the smart connector very slowly, like slower than Qi charging, I guess. But it's always there, so it's always charging, you know, and I just like dock it there, and it's really nice. But yeah, and maybe this change, like in the CAD story that we ran, it was like an elongated oval in the backside versus like the three circles that we see now. And I don't know if that was just like the CAD illustration was not detailed as to what it actually looks like in person or what, but like maybe that suggests a redesign of the whole smart connector in general. And yeah. And maybe there are, you know, other benefits to that would inform new accessories, you know?
Yeah. The problem with relying on the CADs, like for the exact details, is that if the CAD was made just for a case maker to know where they need to punch out holes in the fabric.
Sure. Yeah. That's
then
just like,
You just need an oval, which is exactly what it depicts.
Yeah.
Because also if you look at that CAD, the sides of the actual iPad are flatter because the current iPads are quite chamfered and like curve underneath.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this is more like iPhone SE style where it's like flat edges.
Yeah.
And again, it wasn't clear to me whether the CAD was actually like dead accurate or whether it was just like a rough and ready kind of thing. Oh, this is where you need to put the holes.
Yeah. I mean,
type of deal. So I wouldn't like put too much faith in that, but if they're going to move it to the back, then they're already invalidating all the smart accessories to date. So if they're going to change how it is, then go for it. Like if they made it a bigger metal surface, maybe they can make it charge faster, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had all these stories of people's smart connectors, smart keyboards being unreliable, like the current one.
Yeah, that's true.
Since iOS 11, everyone keeps saying they keep disconnecting. It's a big Twitter meme. Before the MacBook Pro keyboards became the unreliable keyboards, everyone's complaining about the iPad Pro keyboard. So perhaps they found like a better design that makes it, you know, more stable, and a bigger surface area means there's more room. If it gets dislodged slightly, it's still connected and the data can carry on flowing through. So it would definitely, there's definitely a lot of indicators that would suggest they're going for like a bigger change here.
Yeah, I mean, smart connector has been on the market for a long time now, and it's not been explosive in terms of how like well it's been received. I love smart connector because, I mean, the sell for it is that you can attach a keyboard that doesn't have its own battery source, so you don't need to charge it, and you don't need to pair over Bluetooth. It connects, you know, physically, and then sends data over that connector. Like that is so cool, you know. And it's a take on what Microsoft has done with their Surface line, just not with the ergonomics. So I like the idea. It's just it certainly hasn't taken the world, you know, by storm. And you know, some changes could be in order for it. We'll see.
Yeah, speaking of something that is getting changed that people might not like, the Macattacker report also says that this year the iPad Pros will drop the headphone jack.
Yeah, well,
I tend to think people have gotten over that.
Me too. Like, yeah,
tough luck. The iPads never came with headphones in the box in the first place, so the audio output stuff has never been a first, you know, a number one priority anyway.
Right.
And if you want to take Phil Schiller at his word that the reason they're still on the laptops is Pro Audio needs. If there are any Pro Audio usage on the iPad, they go through the Lightning port into a dock adapter, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really use the actual 3.5mm jack. So I think people will happily take a really thin, you know, slim bezel iPad. Oh, the connector's gone, big deal. Move on.
Yeah, on the iPhone, it was the iPhone 7 that dropped the headphone jack, correct?
Yep.
And that was no design change, really. And so we had to look far for answers as to why the headphone jack went away.
And we never really got one.
like, what did we get from that happening, you know? And like with the iPhone 10, like it would have just been fine. Like, oh, this awesome design, that makes sense, you know? But and so with the iPad, it seems like if this is, you know, correct, that we never have that, it's gone for the sake of like principle. We just have it's gone, and we have this awesome new design. Like, I'm sure they could fit it anyway because it's a big iPad. But you know, at some point, it's like you got to get behind what you said, you know, in terms of courage and moving forward with wireless, and that would
do it. And people are very happy with AirPods. Mm-hmm. People are very happy with, you know, a lot of the other W1 stuff. Like the iPhone was always going to take the brunt of the criticism because it was, you know, leading the way on doing this. being the first thing, and obviously it just sells so many millions of units, everyone was going to, you know, have a nice complaint. But I think it's, you know, Apple was on the right side of history. I think it's been proven, really. And, you know, it's still a bit of an annoyance, but here and there, like, I think the future is kind of obvious.
Yeah, I mean, I when I use my iPad, I always use it with AirPods if I'm using headphones. And you could use the Lightning headphones from your iPhone box if you have those. And I think they're like $30 if you know. Or you can buy the adapter for like, what is it, like $5 if you want to use.
I think it's
$9. Okay, so under $10 if you want to use Lightning headphones or regular headphones, the Lightning port. So yeah, that one.
My dongle in the iPhone X box has not left the box.
I used mine like twice. It was recent because my kid took my AirPods and misplaced them for me. And so there was a period where I knew they were going to turn up, so I didn't want to buy new ones. And they eventually did turn up. But I was
Did you not just use Find My AirPods?
that feature.
The most stupid feature I think Apple's introduced in like the last 3 years. Like it just doesn't work.
I used it, and after I found them and charged them, then it said, "Hey, your AirPods have been found." I'm like, "Oh, thanks, buddy."
Real useful.
Yeah. I'm sure someone has found utility in it. Like when you make the AirPods scream, like, you know, send a tone through the speaker, if they're not in the case, then that could be useful. But because before people were doing a workaround, which was like play loud sounds through it. But yeah, it's not quite up to par with the other fun mic.
Yeah, the noise is fine. The whole "we'll show it on a map, we'll alert you when we find it," all that stuff is just...
Yeah.
They might as well not bother.
Yeah. So. This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Udemy. Udemy offers over 60,000 online courses on a variety of fresh topics, so you can learn anything on your schedule. Udemy is the largest and most accessible online learning marketplace, with the most courses, teachers, and opportunities for students everywhere around the globe. Udemy offers courses on a range of topics, including brand new lectures and classes on iOS 12 and Xcode 10, learning to develop apps with Swift 5, and even courses on how to shoot better photos from your iPhone with updates specifically for iOS 12 before it's even public. And even though Udemy has a wealth of knowledge about technology topics, Udemy has teachers with expertise in a wide range of areas. For example, I've been brushing up on a nutrition masterclass to learn more about meal planning and healthy eating, which includes over 3.5 hours of video, and I've got courses on music production and photography queued up after that. The best part about Udemy is how it fully embraces technology. You can view courses on your Mac, iPhone, or iPad, view course content by section and complete quizzes as you learn, access a Q&A section between other students and instructors, and even bookmark specific sections in the videos just by pressing the B key. So check out Udemy and learn how to improve your skills today. Go to ude.my/happyhour right now and get 90% off when you sign up for classes. You'll not find better prices, so sign up for classes now using our link, ude.my/happyhour, and get access to life-changing classes for 90% off. And make sure to download Udemy's app for your iPhone so you can stream your studies wherever you go. That's ude.my/happyhour. ude.my/happyhour. Thanks to Udemy for sponsoring the show. All right, let's talk about the HomePod. There's some very welcome HomePod rumors over the last few days. What's going on with HomePod?
Yeah, this is exciting stuff. iGeneration are reporting through secondhand sources that apparently have used the HomePod private beta software, and this is like the living on beta that some Apple employees, some retail employees have been using on HomePods in their own home for like months, even before, you know, February when the product came out. This is like the testing firmware, and seemingly they're carrying this through, even though there's no public beta. iGeneration got their hands on release notes for the private beta for quote-unquote HomePod OS 12.0. And there's some pretty big stuff in it. A lot of the things that we kind of said was stupid for never being in the first place, particularly addressing the kind of smart assistant side of the equation. So I'm all ears. They beta reportedly includes phone call features, so you can start and answer calls from the HomePod, ask for you to check your voicemail, call someone by number, call someone by contact name. Revolutionary stuff, I know, but I've said this in the show before. The speakerphone on the HomePod is pretty good.
Yeah,
I use it a lot, but it just trains your brain to think that the HomePod does phone calls.
Yeah, the fact that you have to make the call first, either make it or answer it on the iPhone first, and then hand it off every time, is not good.
It's a pain, and then and then your brain's like, oh yeah, I can make a call on this because I was talking on it the other day, and it's like, cool thing is that you cannot do this on the HomePod. It's like stupid. So they're apparently going to address that, which is fantastic. They're also going to add Find My iPhone Siri commands to the HomePod, and this is something which is available on Apple Watch, iPhone, iPad, Mac,
Apple TV. Yeah,
on all the TVs, on all the OS 12 betas, like all of the current.
So you ask Siri to find your iPhone, and make it ding?
Yeah, you can say find any of the devices that appear when you log into the Find My iPhone app. So
right. Even
if you have family sharing, you can ask for like one of the family's devices as well, and it can make it ring, essentially.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so if you're in the house and you're next to your HomePod, you'll be able to say, find my phone, and it will make it ding.
Find my AirPods. Blair. Yeah.
Yeah, that won't happen. And perhaps most dramatically, there was a reference to say that the HomePod will support multiple timers.
This is crazy. So last week, I intentionally didn't follow the news on my vacation. I sat back and, you know, just lived life otherwise. And I did, in preparing to come back to work, look over stories, headlines, details, what happened. And I saw the story about phone calls. I did not see the detail about multiple timers. So as we were preparing for the show today, I was like, what? Whoa. So because why hasn't it happened? Why didn't they announce all this stuff at WWDC? I guess because there's no beta to use, but still. But here it comes, maybe, according to iGeneration.
I will dampen expectations slightly, because I think maybe the reason they didn't announce it is that it might not ship.
It might not be ready, yeah.
Yeah, it could be in this private, beta for a lot longer than 3 months. Like, they could have it in the beta at the moment, and then when September rolls around, they pull it out.
Sure,
and
yeah.
I presume, the Find My iPhone will definitely get through. And even the phone call stuff, Guillaume Rambo said even on the first HomePod 1.0 phone, where there were all these references to doing phone calls on device and everything,
mm-hmm.
and it never obviously came out yet. I have no inside information on this. I kind of think that what these features they're describing here, maybe we would have got them in 11.4 if the AirPlay 2 stuff and stereo pairing hadn't been delayed. Who knows exactly how this shook out, but it to me, I kind of get the timeline's been shifted back 4 months because they were we really need to ship this, we really need to get AirPlay 2 out the door, all this other stuff, we'll just keep it on the back burner until we get AirPlay 2 out. And now obviously the AirPlay 2 stuff came out, now they've gone back to focus on the assistant features that we've obviously seen traces of being in development for a long time, and they're kind of getting through the funnel. Under the original time frame plan, the HomePod would have come out at the end of last year, mm-hmm. and then the 11.4 update would have added timers and phone calls and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Versus what we have now, which is we got calendars, and then we're still kind of in limbo.
Yeah, and they're doing all this with caution because obviously with AirPlay 2, part of the big story there was they announced it and it took forever to actually release it, way longer than expected. It delayed the release of the actual hardware. And then they had to release the hardware before AirPlay 2 was ready. So I can see why they wouldn't want to announce things for HomePod until they're ready.
Yeah, I mean, we keep complaining at them for announcing stuff too early. So we can't really complain at them for not announcing this at WWDC, I guess.
Yeah.
It's kind of hypocritical.
Yeah, I can get around that.
I'm so excited to have multiple timers. It's kind of the meme, though. You can't even do timers. But, it's a smart speaker. It's not an alarm clock. Like, it doesn't have gears. It can do more than one thing at once. You should be able to set timers. You should be able to name them. And it should be able to just work. Like, if you want to put a HomePod in the kitchen, you can have a source timer. You can have a pass timer. They go on at the same time. You can ask for the status of one or the other. Like, the Amazon Echo does this really, really well. And it's part of the reason I think the Echo is so popular. It's just, like, timers are really handy throughout the day. And, you know, this is definitely catch-up. It'd be funny if they launched multiple timers on HomePod, but then, like, the phone still can only do one at a time. But
yeah.
That's going to be a bit weird, but presumably it'll sync up again down the road.
Mm-hmm. There's one thing... the reason I think multiple timers is such a big deal is that there are a lot of things that Echo can do. Like, it's got its own, you know, sort of app store where you can give it skills that do a lot of things that HomePod will probably never be able to do. Like, when I was visiting family, two different parts of my family, they both had Echoes in their homes. And one of the things that the grandparents did was have the Echo say a fox dance that's like telling you dance moves, and it's like for kids basically, but it's like they find it entertaining for their grandkids. And like, I don't think HomePod will ever be able to do that. Maybe, but no time soon. But like, I don't think people that are comparing HomePod to Echo are like, can it do the fox dance or not, you know? But like, multiple timers in a kitchen environment, in lots of environments, is like really useful, you know, from an assistant standpoint. And the one thing that Echo, I don't think, can do very well, like, you can name the timer. You can have your pasta timer. You can have your vegetables timer. You know, you can have your, like, if you're working, you know, for example, you can have this task on a timer and this task on a timer and have its own labels. But I don't think that can transfer between devices. Like, if the kitchen timer goes off and there's an Echo closer to me than the kitchen and I'm talking to it, I don't think I can tell that one to cancel the other one's timer. And if Apple can do that, where they all talk to each other, like you talk to, you know, your HomePod is like one system, and you can tell your bedroom HomePod to turn off the timer in the kitchen, then that would be something that Echo can't do. And that would be an implementation detail that they would be pretty nice.
That would be nice. And it's kind of like what they do with AirPlay 2, right? Where it's like, move the music from this room to this room, or stop. You can tell, you know, your HomePod in the living room to stop playing music in another room, and it can sort it out.
Yeah, I can't.
Same thing, like, turn the timer off elsewhere.
Yeah, I think I could, like, if I've got music playing in the living room, I know I can use the Alexa app to turn it off, I think. But it's tricky, though. It requires naming in the right way, and maybe you've got to say stop playing in the living room. But I'm not – the thing I've always done is, like, go to the one that's playing with the Echoes and do it. Whereas with HomePod, I'm confident in how it works, is that you just address it by name and it does that. So if they can carry that over with timers too, that'd be nice, because I don't think that there's a way, even in the app, to make a timer stop going off without going to that Echo, which, if you've got multiple Echoes, can be a problem.
And the current state of HomePod timers is you can't even pick what noise you want. You get one noise and that's it on the current firmware.
Yeah. You can give it a – well, not for a timer, you can't give it a label. For an alarm, you can give it a label.
An alarm, you can give a name.
Yeah. And it'll say, like, whatever you name it. So if you name it evacuate, you know, say set an evacuate alarm for 2:30. At 2:30, it'll say evacuate. Ding, 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 evacuate. It's like – so
– do that for timers, please.
They're close. And then it shows up in the home app. Your alarm does. I don't think that the timer has any sort of interface on the iPhone.
No.
Yeah. But you could see it happening eventually.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Slow progress. The other nice thing that the iGen report picked up was they're going to provide Wi-Fi status information inside the home app settings. So if you have, like, multiple networks, or you're in an apartment block, you can, you know, check that your Wi-Fi is actually connected to the right thing. Or if you move your HomePod to a different room and you have different access points, you can actually see it. And they've got a feature where you can make the HomePod change to the Wi-Fi network of the iPhone. So at the moment, the only way to make it reconnect to different Wi-Fi is to reset it. And then it takes whatever, when you're setting up, this is my experience anyway, when you're setting up the iPhone, when you set up the HomePod with the iPhone, at that point, at the setup, it uses that Wi-Fi network first, whatever the phone's connected to. And then if you move the HomePod, like I move my HomePod from the living room to the cabin and the cabin's on a different Wi-Fi, I have to reset the whole HomePod just to make the Wi-Fi network change. So at the right now, it's a big pain. And what it sounds like you'd be able to do is go into the home settings and say, change Wi-Fi to what the iPhone is right now. So you can just switch over the Wi-Fi settings without having to reset the whole HomePod unit.
Yeah. And all of this is, you know, according to iGen, from what they've seen and release notes. And it's like, okay, that's cool. We'll see. And then a few
days, I mean, I was hyped up just on this.
Yeah, yeah. And then a few days later, Guy Rambeau found through iOS 12 Beta 5 for the first time, whenever you set up a new HomePod, you already get the personal request card that asks you for permission to enable personal request. And then when your iPhone's on the same Wi-Fi network as your HomePod, you can do things like interact with your messages, set reminders, create notes, do calendar now. Well, as of iOS 12 Beta 5, this card also acknowledges make phone calls. So they don't mention all the other stuff, but it makes sense that it would only mention phone calls because of this being personal request. And this gives a lot of credence to the rumor itself. If you know this is in there, then the other stuff's probably right.
Again, we're still on the personal request system, so one iPhone only.
Yeah, it's like got to be group. On the
Any concept of like group or family accounts or family, you know, like someone on Twitter this week complained to me that if we have like a family reminders list on the HomePod, when my iPhone's not here, no one else in the family can add to the reminders list. And it's like, it's an iCloud reminder where, you know, the HomePod could talk to it without anything else. But, you know, again, these are like the baby steps. And if you're thinking of if I'm following my theory, like as an 11.4 update, hey, that's kind of acceptable. It's like, but because of the delays and stuff, it gets pushed to like 12.0 or even later. And then it's like, ooh. But again, you've got to patch the functionality. And having it is obviously a lot better than not having it. And then maybe next year they address group and family, maybe the year after. Like, you're every single one of these things, like if you do timers and phone calls, that's probably like 30% of the discontentment, you know, with Siri and HomePod today. And you're just slicing off massive chunks. Like,
I feel like a lot of the other work, how to acknowledge, you know, that the HomePod is in a family environment, you know, different user accounts, the iPhone not being around. I feel like those are much harder problems to solve.
Yeah.
Than multiple timers and making phone calls. And so, of course, we get the much needed baby steps out of the way first, and then we can get to the big problems. No.
Yeah, this is like the definition of low-hanging fruit.
Yes. All right, that's a lot to look forward to in terms of HomePod. Like, if all that pans out, like if that just surprises us on iOS 12 release day, is like, oh, there's also this HomePod update, and it's all actually there. That'll be something else. You know, it'll be impressive. So, you know, in terms of like it catching up, because before, like, Apple wasn't talking about the things that weren't on HomePod. Like, so we didn't know if it was by choice or just, you know, by restraint. And this is a good sign that there's motion, because if we go like a whole year, I mean, that was the big head scratcher at WWDC was, wow, they didn't mention HomePod at all. Like, really, it got included in a few of other features that it happens to also support, but nothing specific to HomePod. This is good news for HomePod. So,
yeah. And especially the phone calls thing being in that personal request alert.
Yeah.
That nails down at least that part of it.
At least. Yeah.
And then the other stuff is, you know, a bit more hand wavy.
Yeah, and I just imagine that the HomePod doesn't ring when you get a phone call, so you don't get to answer the phone on the HomePod. I don't see that happening. But just
why
like
not?
Well, I mean, you don't get a ding when you get a message unless you've just sent a message to someone else. And the only equivalent for phone calls would be like if you call and hang up, and they call you right back.
To be fair, the personal request text does say make phone calls.
Yeah, they don't say and receive phone calls. But I can see asking Siri to do your voicemail for you. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I don't see HomePod ringing around the house.
It's like, still going to be kind of annoying, though, then to, like, have to pick up your phone just to answer it. Like,
yeah.
Because when I'm in my office, like, the HomePod's on the desk and then my phone rings, I pick up my phone, I have to slide the phone thing to accept it, then I click speaker, then I click HomePod, then you have to wait 2 more seconds for it actually to switch the audio, and then you can speak. Like, I'm hoping that friction can go away.
Yeah, always be on the calling side, not the receiving side, and you'll be fine. I mean, you could imagine like the HomePod not ringing, but just like glowing, like the green.
Yeah, that'd be all right.
Like pulsate green. It's like, oh, I can tap that and answer, or I can talk to Siri and have it respond to, you know, answer like, you know, hey, HomePod, answer the phone and that work. But I would bet at launch that it's making phone calls and not receiving phone calls.
They did say actually at WWDC that the HomePod will participate in group FaceTime calls with audio only.
Hmm.
So yeah. Surely it would have to ring to do that?
Or hand off to do that.
Yeah, but then it's like, why would they say the HomePod can do it if you're going to the phone to change the source? Like, like Federighi said, like, the HomePod and Apple Watch can join as audio-only participants. Like, did he really mean, oh, you accept on the phone and then you change the output? Like, I don't know. That's kind of a doublespeak there, but yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Apple's earnings. So this came out yesterday, Apple's quarterly earnings results for their fiscal Q3 2018, and they announced revenue of $53.3 billion, 41.3 million iPhones sold, 11.5 million iPads sold, and 3.7 million Macs sold. On the iPhone and iPad side, it's kind of the same numbers as a year ago. On the revenue side, I think that was up, or the profit was up, and the Macs were like way down, right?
Yeah, on units and revenue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Macs were down 13% on units and 5% on revenue, because presumably recently they've been selling a lot of like iMac Pros, so the difference is offset slightly. This, just to be clear, this quarter does not include any sales of the 2018 MacBook Pro, because the quarter ends at the end of June and the Mac Pros obviously came out in July.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing, if you're looking at a year-over-year compare, this time last year, WWC included revs on pretty much every single Mac apart from like the Mac Mini.
Yeah.
So there is a bit of a hard, a direct year-over-year comparison probably isn't the greatest. That being said, this is like the worst performance of the Mac since 2010, which is a pretty big slide downward.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things to take away here is like the iPad wasn't a disaster, which for a while, you know, it was really struggling. And so like to maintain year over year, that's a good sign. And then the Mac is like, it's such a contrast between 11.5 million iPads sold and then 3.7 million Macs sold. It's like, maybe give the iPad more attention. It's like it's doing well, you know?
Yeah, and what I just said for the Mac applies inversely for the iPad, because obviously at this quarter last year, they had the two new iPad Pros in June.
Yeah.
And this year, they don't have obviously any of the major iPads updated
They've got new, cheaper iPads. That was a nice upgrade, but
March, right? So even the initial rush of purchases of them would have calmed down.
Yeah, yeah.
So the that's almost even better for the iPad, essentially.
Yeah,
the Mac, I don't know. Like, I think one quarter probably doesn't tell enough of the picture, but if, you know, if the Mac's down 10% again next quarter and then the quarter after that, then it's like, not so hot.
Yeah, it's just one data point so far. So no trend yet. But I mean, it just makes me think of the iPod Touch, how the iPod Touch just kept shrinking in units sold. Or not the iPod Touch, the iPod category. And eventually they just stopped reporting it out separately and they put it into accessories and then, you know, killed off a bunch of bunch of iPods except for the Touch. But I don't think there's any reason to think that the iPad is in that, or that the Mac is in that camp yet, where it gets reported separately for some reason. Like, the Mac, you really couldn't call that an accessory either. Like, it is what it is.
It's not deprioritized enough yet to be an other product.
right. Yeah. And then I think
the Mac story was kind of like the only big thing here at the moment. Like, everything else was just kind of like, good. You know, Apple stock burst, obviously, because basically nothing matters apart from the iPhone performance. So if the Mac drops, then investors don't really care anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is kind of a continuation of last quarter, where the iPhone X continues to do well. And even though iPhone numbers are not way up, what Apple's earning from selling more exclusive iPhones is shown, comes through, and that's all investors care about.
yeah, average selling price went up from like $690 to $725. Pretty nice jump.
Yep, yep. And then next quarter, they forecast between $60 billion and $62 billion in revenue. I've not looked at what the year ago quarter was for that, but I mean, obviously, you know, that signals that the obvious, which is they expect that to be, you know, new iPhones to come out and then to make a lot of money from that.
So. No way. New iPhones next quarter? Unbelievable.
Crazy.
Yeah. I don't know if you listened to the earnings call, but they took a lot longer than normal to discuss services. Tim Cook literally described every single service Apple does in detail, breaking it down like product by product. He even said that AppleCare was up 50% revenue-wise year over year. Like, they really wanted to stress that services continue to be a huge growth segment for them. It's already their second biggest business.
Yeah, I mean, they had that goal a few quarters ago where they talked about, like, growing the services part of the company by X amount over some years.
Yeah, so the by 2020, they're doubling services revenue from 2016, and they confirmed on the call that they're on track to beat that.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I like numbers. I like earnings calls where Apple's doing badly, just because then it's actually interesting. Because when they're doing fine, like, you know, it's fun and great, and at the moment everyone's, you know, tantamount for the Apple $1 trillion market cap. Like, oh, what's happening? But in terms, like, I like hearing Tim and, like, Mastery, like, on the back foot, like, actually getting difficult questions. When the quarter's doing great and they're, you know, continuing to, like, break records, this was, you know, record-breaking June quarter for them in terms of revenue, they generally get off pretty lightly. And it's just, yeah, like,
it's like our business as usual.
Yeah. And they teased the video project in the call. Tim said, I'm paraphrasing, like, he said, he highlighted again that they hired the two Sony execs, and he said, they're working on a project that we're not ready to talk about yet, but I'm really, really confident in. So take that as you will.
Well, I mean, the other newsy bit that I got out of it was in the U.S., they mentioned that Apple Pay will soon be available at CVS and 7-Eleven. And CVS is notable to me because that was one of the first locations when Apple Pay came out in, like, what, late 2014, that had contactless terminal hardware in stores. It wasn't very common in 2014. And I think Apple Pay, like, maybe worked there for a day or two, but they went out of their way to disable Apple Pay as a payment method because of the currency payment method that they were, you know, part of. And all these years later, they're finally getting ready to accept Apple Pay, which is so nice, because when you go to a CVS to check out, they have their readers, they're lit up, and it's like, if you see that logo, the contactless logo, you can wave your phone and pay, usually, except at CVS, and that'll soon change. And then 7-Eleven, that's nice too.
The funniest thing that Cook said, I think, was he was talking about Apple Pay's growth.
Yeah.
And he said, even good companies like Square, Apple Pay now does more transactions than Square.
Good company.
It's such a weird shout out.
you've got to, I mean, like, Square is a friendly company with Apple, and it's like, you've got to pat that one the right way. And then
they're a good company, but yeah, we're better.
And then you've got to, then Apple Pay is going to be in Germany, I think, by the end of the year. Oh, that's nice. Every time we run stories about the latest Apple Pay banks in the U.S. or new locations, so you can use Apple Pay, or new countries even, we always hear from people in Germany who are like, what about us? It's like, finally, you know. So, although you never know, like, how big the launch is going to be, like, one bank, two banks, you know, so we'll see. But yeah, kind of an uneventful quarter, right? Which is good for Apple, and then bad if you're looking for, like, a story out of it.
Yeah, and we'll be, I'm sure Apple will hit $1 trillion someday and everyone will be happy for it. I just kind of want the $1 trillion thing to be over with, like.
Yeah, because they're already, their market cap, their value is already higher than any other company historically, right? Like, that's already significant.
It's already happened, yeah.
It's just that the $1 trillion number is one more digit than the tens of billions number. And so it's for that reason people care, you know.
Yeah, it's just like a made up milestone, really. And
yeah, it's like today,
everyone,
Apple,
every day now, everyone's like, oh, they're only 4% away, they're only 2% away. It's like, yeah, just someone just give them the money so we can just get over with it and concentrate on something else.
Well, I told you earlier, I was gonna invest $10 billion in Apple so that it'll be done. Like,
you're doing God's work.
Yeah, I tell you what. So, yeah. All right, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. We will be back next week. You can email us at happyhour@95mac.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @ApolloZachBenjamin. You are
BZA Mayo.
All right, and we'll see everybody next week. Bye.